Hi listeners, it's Isabella, producer here at Impacting the Classroom. This week, we wanted to bring back one of our most listened to episodes, but with a twist. Today, we will be sharing the extended cut of our conversation with Dr. Daryl Greenfield of the University of Miami and Teachstone's very own Dr. Veronica Fernandez. They join Marnetta to discuss how educators can start engaging children in science and engineering at younger ages and how class can support that learning. We hope you enjoy.
Today, I'm joined with Dr. Daryl Greenfield, a professor of psychology and pediatrics at the University of Miami, whose work is specifically focused on early childhood science education. Welcome, Dr. Greenfield.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Wonderful. I'm also joined by my colleague, Teachstone Senior Director of Social Impact, Veronica Fernandez. Hey, Veronica.
Hi.
Now, Veronica, I understand that you and Dr. Greenfield have collaborated before. Tell us about your previous work at the University of Miami.
Absolutely. So Dr. Greenfield was actually one of my professors when I was in college. So we go way back. And then he was my co-mentor in graduate school. And we collaborated even after graduate school on many projects. We led several projects in Miami around the understanding and improving interactions for young children. And we were working on promoting equity for culturally and linguistically and racially diverse children within our community, which was a lot of fun. I miss him greatly, but I'm glad we get to continue collaborating.
Wonderful. Dr. Greenfield, can you tell us about your experience working with Veronica?
Veronica and I seem to have known each other forever. As she pointed out, she was an undergraduate at the University of Miami and was involved in research. We have projects where we want undergraduates to have the experience of hands-on, minds-on research. So she was involved in community research working in the Miami-Dade community. She then, when graduated, got involved with a state-funded project called our Early Learning Coalitions, and we have one here in Miami-Dade County. There's a number of work groups, and she and I have been on a series of work groups, bumped into each other all the time, and I slowly convinced her, Veronica, you need to get a PhD, which she has done, and has been an amazing contributor to the field of early childhood and continues to do so.
We agree. Very lucky to have her here at Teachstone. And thank you for your tutelage, right, and encouraging her with those further steps. So Dr. Greenfield, you're on the Committee of Enhancing Science and Engineering in Pre-Kindergarten through Fifth Grades, and your committee recently released a 300-page report called Science and Engineering in Preschool through Elementary Grades. Can you tell us what this paper is about?
So the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine periodically produce what they refer to as a consensus volume. It's a very serious piece of work. What they typically do is they try to find sponsors and they put together a committee who works somewhere from around a year and a half to 2 years. And they take a particular topic. There's a charge that is associated with the topic. So we have it's not just some free form sort of thing, but we have a particular charge. And in a minute, I'll tell you what that charge was. And the committee represents, for ours, is science and engineering. So we have scientists, we have engineers, with people working in early childhood and the preschool ages, also in the elementary grades. We also have representatives from departments of education. So there's teachers and practitioners. So it's a wide variety of stakeholders that put together this volume, and it's referred to as a consensus volume because we all agree with what is in there. And as I said, we usually spend somewhere around a year and a half to 2 years reviewing the research and understanding sort of where we are, where we need to go. So our two sponsors for this particular volume was the Carnegie Corporation of New York and the Robin Hood A Learning and Technology Fund. And the charge that they gave us was to provide guidance on sort of effective approaches to science and engineering instruction in preschool to fifth grade that supports success of all students. So briefly, the report, the entire report is available for free as a PDF. You can download it for free. We've also done a series of webinars for particular audiences. We did one for early childhood, so you can view those as well. But sort of quickly, the charge was to look into what kinds of learning experiences prior to entering school will help prepare children for science and engineering learning in the elementary grades. We were also to look at promising instructional approaches for enhancing science and engineering in preschool through fifth grade. How can science and engineering be connected to or integrated with other subject areas such as math, computer science, English, language arts? What is the role of curriculum and instruction materials? What professional learning opportunities are needed? How do policies and practices at the national, state, and local level either constrain or facilitate effort to enhance science and engineering in preschool to fifth grades? And then what are the gaps in the current research, and what are the key directions for research, both short and long-term, to fulfill those gaps? So our report is quite long, but it's divided into a series of chapters, with each chapter focusing on sort of a particular topic area that's highly relevant. So we have 10 chapters in total. The first chapter is an introduction and sort of lays the foundation for what our report is about, and it lists sort of all of our findings and recommendations. And then we go into the details of the work that we did. So we have a chapter on systems and structures. We have a chapter on contextual nature of learning, how children learn, the developments of children's proficiencies, a chapter on learning environments and instructional practices, one on integrating across domains, a chapter on sort of curriculum and instructional materials, a chapter on how to support educators, a chapter for leadership, for transforming leadership. And then our last chapter, chapter 10, is really a list of our recommendations based on sort of the evidence. Again, this is very rigorous because our committee spent nearly 2 years reviewing research, writing sections of the report. Everyone on the committee read the entire report and had to agree what was in it. And then after that, the Academy sent the report out to a series of independent reviewers who read the report and really looked at the evidence and wanted to say, can we justify the recommendations that we made based on the evidence? And in some cases, you know, they told us, you know, we need to tone down a little bit, or we could say a little bit more in terms of sort of, does the evidence support our recommendations and conclusions?
Thank you so much for that. You mentioned earlier on about some gaps in the research. Can you expand on that? What did you guys discover?
So there's a fair amount of issues around sort of, for example, the potential role of science and engineering in creating equity and justice. And I will talk a little bit about that with specific examples from the research that I'm doing in early childhood. But the basic concern is that we have demonstrated in the report that science and engineering are critical areas for students in terms of their ability to learn how to think, how to problem solve. We know that the problems of our future students are ones that we don't know, you know, potentially what those might be. So we can't have students who simply have rote memorized information or have solutions that are very specific to what's already happened. Like, science really is not so much about learning what we already know, but it's a method for learning what we don't know. So one of the issues in the report is that although science and engineering is really critical, it's really undervalued. We don't have enough resources, we don't support it enough, and there's a fair number of recommendations how to support teachers, what we need support at the local, the state, and national levels to be able to make science and engineering a more critical focus of not just the K-12 system, but beginning even earlier. And our report starts at preschool, but as we know, preschool is not necessarily a magic age where children start to learn about their world. You know, we need to start earlier. But our particular charge was focused from preschool through the elementary grades, where science and engineering just is not happening enough. We need to build that foundation. You can't wait till the kids are teenagers to start to get them involved in science and engineers. And we need to have a greater representation among sort of the diversity of the population. It can't be just one single group that does science and engineering.
Thank you for that. You talked about a lot of things there. You talked about, you know, ROTES and the importance of that process of learning and challenging children's thinking, right? Talk to us about how your research ties to class, right? Because we have done some collaborations, right, with you. I know you were at, you were a keynote at one of our Interact summits, and you really talked about how those things are interconnected and how class supports science and math learning. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. So as you are aware, and hopefully the audience is aware, class is about the quality of interactions. And it's not so much about necessarily what is being taught, although that is critical. It's really about setting the stage for children feeling comfortable and supported emotionally, to be able to feel a safe space, you know, to be able to learn. It's about sort of organizing the classroom activities so that there's not a lot of wasted time. And also the critical piece for us, and I think this the area that science and engineering shines, is in the area of instructional support. You know, and not sort of focusing a huge amount of time on just rote learning, memorizing information, seeing a teacher do an experiment and then replicate that particular experiment and demonstrate that you can come up with the correct answer. So the science and engineering has actually gone through a sort of major transformation for how it is being taught in the K-12 system that really sort of supports the notion of the quality of interactions that class emphasizes. So just sort of like a brief history of this, starting somewhere in the early 2000s, group that does the advanced placement tests were concerned by the fact that a lot of the students do well in an advanced placement class. They take the test, but then when they go off to college, they struggle. And it's also the case that a fair number of the brightest students don't want a career in engineering and science. So they began to look into this, and the National Academies of Sciences right afterwards said that we just can't focus on high school. We really need to think through, you know, starting say in kindergarten to get a better understanding of sort of the precursors and the foundation for this. And they put together a working group, and that group put together a set of recommendations, and they actually wrote a volume called Taking Science to School that was published in 2007. It got a lot of feedback from stakeholders, that sort of a back and forth review. And what they basically said is that the reason the students are struggling and the reason why students don't want to go into science and engineering as careers is that we are currently teaching, this was, you know, prior to when the volume came out, we're teaching science in a very disconnected way from students' everyday lives. And we're covering a huge number of topics and not in a very a level of depth and understanding. The description of sort of our science education system was it is a mile wide and an inch deep. Then just sort of, if you recall, if you were part of that education system, you probably recall you would spend 6-7 weeks on a particular topic. You would learn how to read a word problem and figure out like what's the critical pieces of information in that word problem that you would take out and extract and stick into a particular equation. You then, you know, grind out the equation, you get to quote the correct answer. I mean, bright students can do that, but they didn't, so how is that relevant? And then after that 6 or 7 week period, you then switch to another topic that was completely disconnected from the previous topic and do that over and over again. So your education was, you know, learning to do some rote sort of activity, doing experiments where the teacher would, your science teacher would demonstrate something and, you know, see, can you get the same result that I got in my experiment? And as a consequence, students like, why would I want to be a scientist or an engineer? This is like boring. This is, you know, I spend my life doing this sort of stuff. So the initial volume that came out in 2007, Taking Science to School, said, we really need to rethink how science is being taught. And what they argued for was science needs to be an active process. We need to engage the students in both hands-on, so actively engaging in learning by doing, as well as thinking about, you know, what are the principles that I'm and the concepts that I'm acquiring as I'm doing science. And instead of covering a huge number of topics over the K-12 system, let's limit the topics to ones that are highly critical for being a human on our planet. So ideally, we'll have some number of the students who think, yes, this is going to be a good career. But in general, the whole goal was that anyone who's in the K-12 system is going to be exposed to science in a way that's going to make them science illiterate. They are going to know a deeper level of understanding of some small set of topics that are highly relevant, you know, to I'm a human on this planet. How do I understand sort of the major topics? And if you're reminded about what science covers, science is life science, right? So it's people, plants, and animals. It's physical science, the properties of objects. Materials, what are the properties of materials and how do they interact with each other? Things like force and motion, you know, pushing, pulling, and so forth. What are the various sources? And then you have as a third topic, earth and space science, which again is like, you know, what is your environment? You know, how do we as humans interact with an environment to support it, support our planet? How does our planet support us? And then they decided that it's also critical to include the application of science. So they added engineering and technology as the fourth area. And they then said, what we'll do is we'll have a small number of topics that need to be learned starting in kindergarten and even, you know, potentially earlier, as our report argues for, by getting students to acquire this knowledge, these topics, not by rote learning, but by actually doing, engaging in scientific practices. And a small set of scientific practices were outlined. And they need to think about broad, important, overarching concepts that are part of all of science, but in essence are ubiquitous to being a human on the planet. And interestingly, although the report was entitled Taking Science to School, Kindergarten through Eighth Grade, they actually had a whole chapter 3, that talked about, as I mentioned, the fact that science doesn't start when you're in kindergarten. You know, young kids are ripe for engaging in science and engineering. And then in 2012, what ended up happening, a new framework, a conceptual framework for K-12 science education came out. And then various sorts of things happened at the national level during the Obama administration. There was a day-long symposium. There are a series of reports that had been published. I was part of a group supported by the funders in Chicago. We created a report, Early STEM Matters, again, sort of laying out some general principles that were important, not just for science and engineering, but also early childhood. And we now, in just this past year, through funding from Carnegie and the Robin Hood Foundation, published this consensus volume about what are the issues, what do we know about science and engineering from preschool through the elementary grades, and how do we begin to support and make that a greater influence.
Thank you so much. So many things that tie to what we do here at TeachStone, right? How to intentionally integrate what children are learning, scaffolding and questioning their responses and challenging their thinking, right? Getting them to use more higher order thinking, those hands-on experiences, connection to the real, right? Like all of those things you were saying in what you stated. So that clear alignment of class and that instructional support domain was very present in all of that. Thank you for tying that together for us. I'm just gonna say it's been a little bit since I've been in the classroom, right? But I do remember that, you know, just working with colleagues or even as supporting them as coaches in my previous role, science is scary, especially when you don't have, like we lean into what's comfortable, right? So how do we demystify science and make it more accessible for our ECE teachers to help to encourage them to engage children in science learning?
I'm going to move a little bit away from the report and talk about what we've been doing and with infant, toddlers, and preschool age children within the EduCare Learning Network. So a couple of the foundations that are associated with EduCare Learning Network created what they refer to as acceleration grants. In 2002, if you're not at all familiar with the EduCare Learning Network, we can give you a link to the website, where all our resources and lists of our schools are provided. But the network started in 2002 with a program in Chicago and a program in Omaha. And the network slowly expanded. In 2007, Miami joined the network, and Veronica and I were involved as sort of the local research partner for Miami when she was here. And the network has slowly grown to where now we're over 20 sites around the country. And in 2012, when the network reached its 10-year anniversary, a group of us from the network, and what's nice about the network is that we have researchers, we have practitioners, we have policymakers, and we have funders, and we have the ability to really sort of think about how we can create these greater connections between research, policy, practice, and funding. And we decided, let's put together a new 10-year plan to sort of think about like where we've been, but where we would like to go over the next 10 years. And that report was published in 2014, and it was very, very comprehensive. Lots of us worked on it for well over a year. And then the Buffett Early Childhood Fund said, this is a very comprehensive and important report, but it's really not gonna go anywhere without some funding. So they decided to contribute funds to create what they refer to as acceleration grants to move this forward. And the acceleration grants could not be just one center. It had to be a number of centers working together. And they funded me to use science as the foundational focus for one of these acceleration grants, which we referred to as the Early Science Initiative. And what we end up doing, we initially go to the sites that are involved. We initially had 4 sites, then we moved up to 14 sites. The pandemic has made this a little bit more difficult. But what we end up doing is when we go visit a center for the first time, and these are all around the country, we start off just by telling the teachers, who are sometimes embarrassed by the fact that science is something we're supposed to be doing, but we don't really do it. We're not really sure how. We need to focus on language and literacy and math. What we end up saying, we just want to sort of hang out for the first day or so and just kind of see what's happening in your classroom. If you don't mind, we'd like to do a little bit of videotaping and take pictures. We do that. And then when we meet with them for the training, we present to them the framework, this K-12 framework, which we have adopted for early childhood. And Veronica and I are applied developmental psychologists. So we are not gonna say, okay, let's go backwards, but rather let's look at infants and let's see the degree to which infants are behaving like scientists and engineers. And when you do that, what you end up seeing is that they really are scientists and engineers. And the reason for that is if you think about sort of maximizing opportunities for learning to occur, what you want to do is you want to choose a topic that is engaging both physically and mentally and is goal-directed, motivated by the learner. Instead of telling the learner, I'm going to make you learn something, lots of people can learn things if they're forced to, but they're not going to do more than what they need just to learn the basics. Whereas if someone is directly motivated and goal-directed and they want to learn the topic, they're going to put a lot of effort in it, right? They're going to be curious. They're going to show initiative. They're going to show persistence, these sort of important approaches to learning and executive function sorts of skills. And you also want the learning to be collaborative. We learn better with others as opposed to learning by ourselves. Even college students, time for exam, or you go to medical school or an engineering school, you don't study for an exam by yourself, you study with a group, right? Because studying together with support from experts in various areas is always better. So if you think about what is the thing that is most motivating and goal-directed for young ones, infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, and you know, even in the early elementary grades to learn, it is the world that I've been born into, like sense making, right? And what is it about? It's about people, plants, animals, right? That's life science. It's about the objects you interact with, you know, things that roll and bounce, whatever, you know, what happens when you mix two things together. It's physical science, you know, it's like, you know, you go outside, it rained, you know, there's a puddle, you know, jumping in the puddles is a lot of fun, but then the sun comes out, where'd the puddle go? So you've got earth and space science, and then there's always the engineering and technology that's everywhere around us. You know, you put your hand, you know, you go to a bathroom in a public place, you put your hand under, the water turns on, the towels come out, you know, you go to a crosswalk, there's a little sort of a ramp with bubbles on it, you know, to lead into the crosswalk. You have a crosswalk area, you know, that has a pattern, you know, typically white, dark. And then you also have the light that follows a pattern, right? It goes green, it goes yellow, it goes red, it repeats itself. And these are sort of important indicators for young kids because instead of like memorizing colors, you know, on a piece of paper, what does green mean in our environment? Green means go. If you see a sign that's green, you know, okay, that's safe. I can go there. If you see a sign that's yellow, you know, that's caution. I need to be careful. If you see a sign that's red, you know, there's something not so good there. I got to be very, very careful. Don't really go there. So they're exposed to all of these particular topics, you know, and they want to learn them because it's motivating. It's you know, sense-making for them. And what the framework does and what our adaptation of the framework does, it says science opportunities are everywhere. And as a consequence, take advantage of what children are interested in. Think about what the local context provides as opportunities and think about the influence of culture because culture influences how we learn and use those to teach kids about the world in which they live, their everyday lived lives, by engaging them and helping them understand these particular topics by engaging in practices, observing, describing, asking questions, trying to solve a particular problem. How do you plan and carry out an investigation to do that? What predictions do you think, you know? And the goal is to create a culture of inquiry in which every child is viewed as your opinion or your ideas matter. Right. We're not going to, you know, say, well, one person, you know, this is what they say, so we all have to follow that. And the basic goal of science is to share in a very equitable way everyone's ideas. And then you document those ideas, you document the predictions, and then, you know, you plan and carry out the investigation and see what happens. So it's a community in which everyone honors everyone else and everyone is allowed to express. And again, by learning it as a community, you learn better than trying to do that on your own. So as a consequence, what ends up happening, this equity and justice is built into the system. And what we end up doing is when we present the framework to the teachers after we videotape and we give them some, you know, sort of simple exercises to do initially, we then show them what's happening in their classroom and we have them backmap the activities in the classroom onto the framework. Like, what are the kids learning about, you know, when they're in free play? What are they trying to understand? And it's, you know, something about their world. How are they doing this? They're engaging in practices, right? They're planning and carrying out investigations. They're trying things. They're observing and describing. You know, they're predicting what's going to happen. And then there's concepts that are available to them, like cause and effect happens everywhere. Patterns are everywhere. Structure-function relationships. You can, you know, tell what something does by, you know, looking at its structure. And if you actually look really, really closely, you know, at young infants, what are they doing? They want to know, what is this, right? And they're constantly asking questions. There's research by Michelle Chouinard. It's a Society of Research and Child Development monograph, you know, in which she looks at children's questions. And she's got a series of studies that she looks at, one of which is analyzing sort of the language that parents have in conversations with their children when they begin to speak, you know, and what she shows in that monograph is that children Once they begin to talk, a year and after 2 years of age, they'll ask 100 questions an hour of their parents. You know, parents like, you know, I can't wait till my child talks. And then it's like, why all day?
I have a three-year-old, Daryl, so I'm living that right now.
I have a three-year-old granddaughter, and I have two of them. I'm living that as well. So, you know, they want to know, what is this? And they want to know, what does it do? Right. So that's again, kind of a structure function or a cause and effect relationship. And then they want to engage actively in interacting. So they want to know, what can I do with it? And so what ends up happening is, when we show the teachers the videos of their classroom, we ask them back map it. They see the children are learning about people, plants, animals, objects, their world. So I mean, it's the topics of science. They're doing it by engaging in practices. And it would be helpful if the adults support them in pointing out, this was cause and effect. You know, look at the structure and the function. And as a consequence, it's not going in and getting the teachers to say, okay, stop what you're doing. I'm giving you something totally different to do. You know, you got to learn how to do something different. It's simply of getting them to see that their children are already doing science and engineering, and how do you support that? And one sort of easy way to sort of make a transition is, a lot of the early childhood programs focus on themes. You know, so for a month you'll have a theme, like a theme. It's like, you know, October we'll do pumpkins, and there's some other theme. And themes are nice because kids are learning some things, but it's disconnected. When you go to the next theme, there's no connection from the previous theme. But if you take the topic, like pumpkins or whatever, and you begin with an inquiry, you know, what are the questions that children have? What do they want to know about pumpkins? You can then create an inquiry in which you're answering those questions, and you're pointing out cause and effect. You're pointing out like stability and change, like what is the outside, say the outside of the pumpkin, it's hard. You know, why does that have that structure? When you open it up, what's inside? You know, you let it sit out, it changes. So as you go to the next topic, you're going to remind the kids, like, you know, what's the cause and effect here? What's the structure function? What are the patterns? And then now create sort of the continuity and in some sense, a much more sort of comprehensive sense of how the world works. So what the issue with the teachers is to get them, in essence, to stick their toe in the water, right? This is not ice water. It's warm, it's comfortable, you know, and get them to see their children as budding scientists and engineers, and then provide the support for them in terms of how do you scaffold, how do you support all these other areas. And what's also nice about the science and engineering is that language happens. And it's not language of memorizing a word, it's language that's relevant to the concepts that children are learning. You know, social emotional aspects come into play because you have to work together. Like if kids are building, say, a structure, a ramp structure in the block area, there's not enough pieces for everyone to, you know, have their own ramp. So the kids have to collaborate. We've seen them build a common structure in the center, and then each gets to make their own ramp going off in a slightly different direction.
Now, you said a lot of great things.
Other aspects come into play. And we've actually published, one of my former grad students and I published an article showing that if you ask teachers to do a typical circle time, a typical storybook reading, do some math activity, do a science activity, you design it any way you want. We want to videotape it. And we had undergraduates who we trained to do class coding. Science, even when it's not very good science, has higher levels of instructional support.
Because it does. Teachers
think when you're doing science, we need to brainstorm. We need to get the kids to think about you know, what's the concepts that are involved here. So science actually is an excellent road to improve children's instructional support, because it's, but you know, as you were saying, these high quality interactions that focus not on just so much compliance, which obviously is important, but focus on the quality of the classroom, on quality teaching and learning.
Thank you so much, Veronica. I'm itching to know your thoughts, right? So with your experiences around, you know, science and the ECE educator, what are you doing and what has your experience been to help to make this easier for them?
Yeah, I think a few things that Daryl touched upon was this idea that science can be intimidating, because the way we learned science back in the day, right, was a was a lot of memorization of complicated facts, right? And I think that in our evolution of science education, we've evolved from memorization to understanding, right? And application into our real world. And those are a lot of the points that Daryl made. And I think that with educators, when they're nervous and they say, well, I didn't do that well in science, or I don't understand chemistry deeply, one of the things that we did in some of the workshops that Daryl was talking about is that we presented them with two scenarios, right? Because it's helpful for them to see the application in the real world. And we say, okay, the first scenario is an educator who really knows a lot of scientific facts. Like, this person really knows everything there is to know about how grass grows, right? And she's walking with a child on a sidewalk, and there's a crack in the sidewalk, and there's a little blade of grass that's sticking out of the sidewalk. And a child says, why is grass growing there, right? This a question that a child might ask. And this educator, who knows everything there is to be about science, goes into this whole explanation and tells the child why it is that it's growing, and using scientific knowledge and bringing in scientific terms and giving all of that explanation. And the child just sort of looks at this educator, is a little bit overwhelmed by the response, and goes, okay, and walks away, right? Scenario two, same thing. You have a curious little child who notices that a blade of grass is growing and asks the teacher, why is grass growing there? And this educator doesn't know all the scientific facts, but pauses, takes a moment to notice with the child, gets down to this child's level. They observe the blade of grass together. The educator models a series of questions, right? I wonder, I don't know why the grass is growing there. Where does grass typically grow? And they have these conversations about the grass, and they notice the crack of the floor. They follow that crack. They label, they observe, they describe, they talk, they ask questions together. And the educator is willing to go on a learning journey with the child and says, I don't know, but let's find out together. And they go on that learning journey together. And when you reflect on which child benefits more from that interaction, is it the educator who knows all of those scientific facts, who, you know, has a master's degree in chemistry, or is it the educator who is willing to engage in interactions that are intentional and learn alongside the child, right? So we do a lot of other things through those conversations, but it's helping educators to understand that willingness is more important than a knowledge bank of scientific facts. So if we can get educators to understand that and be more willing to just learn alongside children, to know that they don't have to have all of the facts, but just be willing to slow down, to pause, to notice, to observe, to talk, to label, to describe, to ask questions, to test things out, even if it doesn't work out, to revisit and try it out again. That's where the magic of scientific thinking and learning happens for young children.
Most definitely. So we want those, we want educators to be just as curious, right? Remember their toddler years, right? Get dirty, move things, right? Like, have that same curiosity and interest in, that then everything else is like a parallel process, right? Like, of learning together, those open-ended questions, because you're trying to figure that out and learn too, so you can scaffold the child's learning. Like, yeah, I like what both of you guys said. So much information in there for our early childhood educators to really lean into science as more of what it is, right? It's easily accessible. They're doing it already, but it's the how of how that happens and what we do with that, that really elevates what's happening in those classrooms.
What Veronica said is really sort of critical. And we even tell teachers, like, if you know the answer, don't tell the child the answer. Instead, that's a great question. You know, how can we discover the answer to, together? And again, what's nice about this framework that we've adapted, the K-12 framework, we call it the early science framework. What's nice about the framework is that it's consistent. So children learn how to ask and answer their own questions, and how to engage in problem solving, how to plan and carry out investigations, or how to, as an engineer, to design a prototype and test it and see where it fails and then redesign to make it better. And because the framework is, you know, learning important content by doing and by thinking, it applies everywhere. So, you know, the issue of engaging families and parents, You know, it's not like you have to teach them a separate language. It's again, getting them to see how their children are engaged in science and engineering at the home. So like the typical parent will think, I shouldn't be doing science because it's hard. And besides, you need aptitude for it. Science and math, you know, only older boys can do this. And, you know, if I want to do a science experiment, I have to go to the store and there's all these choices, you know, which is the best one to purchase. I don't really know. And then when I have to pay for it, then I'm not sure how to do it. Now, I'm sure I'll do it wrong. There's probably one and only one correct way to do it. And the kids will ask me questions and I don't know the answer. And it's going to make a mess and it's going to take time. And I don't have time for this. So like, you know, this is probably a bad idea. But in reality, children are engaged in science and engineering as part of everyday routines. So again, it's making it visible to the parents that what's happening at home, like how do you get to school, like getting up in the morning, having breakfast, brush your teeth, going to sleep and so forth. All the daily routines and activities that are happening, like cooking, you know, has the science in it. And if you get the adults to sort of see and support that, then you can create these wonderful opportunities for parents. And I mean, children love, you know, the attention. Instead of like, okay, I got to make dinner, go, you know, go and don't get into trouble while I'm doing that. You know, get the, my oldest grandchild who's now five, when she was two, she was the sous chef. You know, she initially would mix things and then she started to measure. And, you know, and she's at the point now as a five-year-old, she decides on what's going into the pancakes for Friday or Sunday on the weekend. And starting out like as a two and a three-year-old, as a fussy eater, she came like, Mama, I made that. Why aren't you trying that? I made that. You have to try and taste that. And because the framework is not a canned curriculum, and what we do, we work in communities that with partners of programs. You know, we don't go in as experts. They have expertise, you know, to share with us. They know what's practical. They know what's happening. They know what they can do and what the capabilities of their children are. What you can end up doing is not only co-constructing the curriculum based on the teachers, what the kids are interested in the classroom and the local context and the culture. You can do the same thing at what's happening at home and gather information from the families and bring that information into the classroom. So not only do you have a school to home connection, you can have very strong home to school connections so the children see what's happening in the classroom. That's what's happening in my home. That's the kinds of things that we're doing, you know. So it creates sort of this common language and it teaches kids, you know, not stuff, as Veronica says, not memorizing a whole bunch of complicated stuff. It teaches them how to think. It teaches them how to problem solve with a system that is continually growing. The practices become, the practices don't change. The cross-cutting concepts don't change. The content doesn't change. You just get a deeper and deeper understanding of how to engage in practices, a better understanding of the nature of the concepts as you acquire, you know, this content, which is now limited, but highly important, you know, to being an adult who is science and engineering literate.
I love that. Thank you so much. And I love how you wove those connections together and how that can happen more organically for children, for them to get more of the science into their days and for family to recognize those opportunities. We don't have a lot of time left and I still have so much stuff to ask, but one of the things I really wanted to touch on before we left was the primary reason for the paper being written and the work around equity and justice through science and engineering. I'd love to read aloud this excerpt from the intro. Although a group of academics and educators who support and study how young children make sense of and engage in science and engineering is unlikely to end systemic justice, such a group can use their expertise to try to work toward justice locally and societally. So that resonated for me, right? As a person of color with, you know, children of color. Can you break that down for us? What can an educator do to work toward justice when it comes to teaching science and engineering?
So what we did in our report is we tried to broaden the understanding of what is science and engineering and why it's so critical. So in terms of our approach in the report for equity and justice, we argue for increasing opportunities and access to high quality science and engineering learning and instruction, you know, starting at an early age, to emphasize increased achievement, representation, and identification with science and engineering. So right now, and the way we were sort of taught science, smart kids can do it, but they don't identify with it. They're like, I can do this, I can get an A in this class, but I'm not a scientist and I'm not an engineer. So we want children and students as they grow to identify like, you know, this is me, this is something I can do. I can think, I wanna learn about my world. I wanna make sense of who I am and the people and the plants and the animals, everything around me. So I want to be able to get a sense of, that I am a scientist and engineer. We also want to sort of expand what constitutes science and engineering. So it's not something that's done one and only one way. There's multiple ways. And if you go to sort of the website that was created for our report, it's again, it's entitled Science Engineering from Preschool Through the Elementary Grades, The Brilliance of Children and Strength of Educators. We go to what says our work. You can see a number of presentations and a number of papers that we commissioned, you know, that show science, you know, from indigenous populations, lots of different ways to do science. It doesn't have to be an experiment in, you know, in the classroom. And then also seeing science and engineering as part of the sort of justice movement. So that's sort of what we ended up writing in the report. And there's a number of things that the teachers can do. So we want them to understand why science and engineering need to be a critical focus in early childhood. You know, it takes advantage of what children want to learn. It takes advantage of what they're already doing, and it teaches them these important skills. And it's not like, okay, we do science for 20 minutes, now we have to stop, we have to do math, we have to do language and literacy. It's all built into that because, you know, when you are doing science, like you want to know, like, this is bigger, how much bigger? Or this is more, well, how many more? I mean, now you're engaging in math. Like, there's an object in the bathtub or in the water table, you know, drops down to the bottom. Some of this other stuff stays at the top. Like, you know, what is that? Well, we can give you a name for that concept, sink or float. So language occurs. Children tend to be more persistent and more curious and more flexible when they want to learn something, and science, you know, is what they're motivated to do. So the whole notion of why science is critical, get them and, you know, we can give them access to our website where we sort of lay out what this early science framework looks like. It's learning to be good observers of young kids. Watch them. What are they doing? They may, even infants may start out sort of randomly interacting. They bump into some object, but quickly, you know, they're intentional. What is this? What does it do? You know, what can I do with it? And it's important to have this greater alignment and coherence from preschool to the elementary grade. So, you know, by adopting this notion of let's watch children, let's support their knowledge building in these content areas by engaging them in doing and thinking, you know, it's going to help prepare the children. And then we work with, you know, lots of at-risk populations, prepare the children, you know, so when they go off to elementary school, kindergarten, oh, wait a minute, this is something totally different than we've done before. And by really understanding there's not one and only one way to do science. You know, if you think about science and engineering as opportunities for children to take advantage of what they're interested in, and, you know, it's the science topics, to do it in a way that advantages what is there, what's their local context, right? You, the moon is made of green cheese, that's nice, but we're not going to the moon, right? What's right in front of you? What does your context provide? And, you know, there are concepts that are going to be ubiquitous to you as a person on the planet. Cause and effect, it's everywhere. Structure, function, stability and change, you know, patterns, to begin to get adults to slowly see all their young children as scientists and engineers, and then get help scaffolding and supporting that both at home and at school and, you know, wherever the opportunities take place, you know, going to museums, going, you know, going for a walk outside, you know, going to the park. playgrounds are great opportunities to, you know, to look at engineering and technology. So the goal is to get the adults in young children's lives to see them as engineers and scientists, to be good observers, see what the kids are interested in, and support that learning. And it's going to be sense making. It's going to be science and engineering.
Veronica, did you want to add anything?
I just think something important that Daryl's bringing up is about both meeting children and educators where they are, right? So bringing scientific thinking to their learning is not about, with young children, right? Is not about saying, okay, now it's science time, right? I'm going to teach you about science. It's about thinking about what it is that children are learning, thinking about what they're interested in, thinking about other concepts that they need to learn, and bringing in scientific thinking as a process of inquiry. How do we ask questions? How do we observe? What do we notice? How do we try things out? What do we learn when we try things out? How do we communicate what we found? How do we try again? How do we make adjustments in order to potentially get at our desired outcomes, right? So I think a lot of times when educators think about science, they think about, oh, kids are not ready, and that's intimidating. But some of the things that Daryl was talking about, it's like opportunities throughout the daily routine, right? During hand washing, if we slow down and notice, there's so many opportunities to ask questions, to get children to notice cause and effect during diapering, during mealtime. I remember when my daughter was really young, she was playing with her cereal and she would usually just eat it dry. And as she got a little bit older, we started doing the cereal and milk thing. And I guess we were distracted and the cereal sat in the milk for a while, and she took a spoonful of it and she spit it out immediately. And I took that as an opportunity for science nerding. I said, oh, is the texture different? Did that cereal get soggy? It was so strange for her, right? Because when she first started eating, it was so crunchy, that thing she was familiar with. And all of a sudden it got soggy and it was different, right? So because I have this background in science, of course, this is a teachable moment for my child. And we had a conversation about texture. She wasn't totally understanding everything, but I was describing her experience through this lens of science. Then we were able to get a fresh Cheerio and one that we plucked out from her milk, and we touched it and she explored it. And is she going to walk away with deep understanding around texture and the effect that milk has on things? No, but she had that experience early on. She was able to touch. It was relevant to something she had just experienced. So just bringing that intentionality to everyday interactions and routines that we have with children.
Yeah, and it creates a foundation to build on, right? So, because it gives you something to connect to at a further date as you elevate her understanding of those concepts. So wonderful. Yeah, you got to love teachable moments.
One additional comment, what Veronica said was critical. And the issue is meeting both children and adults where they are. We never want it to be one size fits all. Like Brian's, okay, now we all do science. Everyone does it the same way. The teacher and the student are individuals. They're somewhere, and you can't, you know, just say, okay, now everyone, all the adults need to learn this now, and all the students need to learn this now. One of the great strengths of early childhood is the focus on, you know, individualization, you know, finding out where this child is, what does this child need. But every learner, it's important for every learner. The same thing is true with the adults. You know, some of the teachers will jump in and think, you know, the science thing is great, and they'll move quickly. Others will move more slowly. Others will sort of wait and see what it looks like. But, you know, the goal is to meet everybody where they are and make sure that you individualize instruction and don't force something that either the child or the adult is not ready for, or even, you know, give them something that they already know. I mean, one of the issues with why sometimes good early childhood programs fade out is that, you know, they go into kindergarten and first grade, and the teacher has an expectation of what they should know. They already know it. You know, they show it off to the teacher, but then the teacher doesn't think, well, this child already knows this. What's next? I need to push them, you know, as opposed to, you know, they're happy to tell it to count to 10. They can, like this, my 5-year-old granddaughter goes, 1, 2, skip a few, 99, 100.
You're absolutely right, both of you, right? meeting them where they are, but being in tune, right? When we talk about educator sensitivity and just really knowing your children where they are, meeting them where they are, individually supporting them through their processes. And another way, science and technology in class are just perfect together. Thank you guys for joining me today. I enjoy talking about how class supports science and math learning, the importance of and how early childhood educators can get more science into their day, how science shows up in our everyday lives, but also how to work toward justice through science and engineering. You can find today's episode and transcript on our website, teachstone.com/impacting. And as always, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together. Thanks, guys.
Thank you again. This was a pleasure.